Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
It's great to have you here on the Clark Howard Show, where it's about your empowerment with knowledge so you can keep more of what you make. Empowerment, knowledge, live on less than what you make. That's what we're about on the Clark Howard Show. And so my job is to give you advice, answer questions, give you guidance, give my opinion, all with that being the goal in mind. And the information I give you, it's got to be information you can act on. So there are times you're listening, you're hearing me, you're thinking, oh, come on, Clark. That answer just didn't cut it. Or my opinion just is off base or whatever. I don't need feedback from you on that. I don't need you to have those thoughts in your own head. I need you to publish them. And that's why at Clark.com, we have Clark Stinks, where you can let me know where I missed the mark. And then others can react to what you've said, and they can comment. And it gives an opportunity for me to learn. Once a week, our producer, Krista, goes through your posts on Clark Stinks and shares them with you right here on the air.
I should have never encouraged you to speak.
You must think I'm pretty stupid.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
Well, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong.
Maybe you're right, pal.
All right. A couple of password app Clark Stinks I'm going to share with you. Clark, I've been a faithful listener to your podcast for years and generally find your advice to be helpful and useful. But I was really burned by your advice to use Dashlane. It wiped out all my passwords, and an old email account is now unrecoverable. All the other passwords were just annoying to recover, but some, like the email account, were impossible. That includes, by the way, the password for your message board so I could post this. I had to re-register with a new username and password, expletive deleted. I am certain a good portion of this is user error, but this is really has potential for a huge waste of time. And I'm not even sure how much hassle with that email address now that the email address is gone. I'm so frustrated. I couldn't even think about a creative or humorous way to say Clark Stinks, Jay in St. Louis. And I'll read the second one real quick about password managers. Hi, Clark. First, let me start by saying I do not think you stink. Love your podcast and other resources. I do think you could do better with your password manager recommendation of Dashlane and LastPass. Both of these password managers store your data online and both charge a monthly or yearly fee. Any data that is stored online is vulnerable to hacking. Instead, I use two local password managers. My data is stored locally through, although both offer options to sync online. They also have options to sync over your home network, which is the option I use. KeePass, K-E-E Pass, is a free open source password manager, and eWallet by Ilium Software is a one-time purchase for $10 for mobile devices and $20 for a Windows PC. There's no monthly or yearly fee. Both are excellent programs, and since data is stored locally, more secure. Shelley.
I want to first address the Dashlane. I've not heard a complaint like that about Dashlane, and I'm really sorry about the fact that trying to protect yourself ended up being an ultra hassle factor for you. So I'm sorry I wasted so much of your time. On the issue of storing locally, again and again, we've had posts for various things I've talked about that go back to the core of not storing things in the cloud because you create a secondary vulnerability when you're trying to eliminate a vulnerability in the first place. So will you name those two things that you store locally instead of in the cloud again? Because I'm not familiar with either of them.
KeePass, K-E-E Pass. Is one, and then the other one is eWallet.
All right, I appreciate those suggestions. You know, this is an area where I know a decent amount, but probably enough just to be dangerous. And having suggestions from people who've walk down this path and are very knowledgeable about technology is really helpful. So anyone else, if you have specific suggestions about how best to protect your online identity that you want to share with others, please post that.
Clark answered a Clark Stinks about selling used CDs. The answer was correct as far as it went, i.e. it's not a copyright violation to sell used CDs, but I remember the call that prompted the stink, and I remember wondering why Clark didn't bring up copyright issues at the time. As I recall, the caller said he wanted to sell his CDs because he'd already made digital copies of the content and didn't need the originals anymore. If you buy a CD, you have the right to make your personal copies for your own use. If you transfer ownership of the CD, you give up the right to keep those personal copies. Nobody's ever likely to be prosecuted for it, but legally and ethically, it's a copyright violation.
Thank you for posting that. And let me tell you an annex to it that stunned me. I had no idea till I read two reports recently that the music industry is still having an enormous problem with pirating, where people are stealing music they're not paying for. And that was a problem that I thought was gone because of Pandora, Spotify, Apple Music, and the rest, where you have for either for free with commercials with some of them or with you paying a monthly fee, you have essentially an unlimited library of music. And if you pay a fee of some kind, you have both online and offline ability to play music. I didn't know people still stole music.
Clark, you recently stated that money in your retirement account should be well diversified. Quoting you verbatim, well diversified, what that means in simple English is that having money in a variety of stocks, not your employer's own. In fact, the percent I like to have an employer's own stock in a 401k is 0%. This was good advice until the part about not having any 401k money in an employer's own stock. There is nothing wrong with having some money in the employer's own stock, especially if you work for a stable company or a blue chip company listed on the S&P or Dow Jones. 0% is actually too conservative, eliminating any risk, when especially young workers should be taking on some limited risk.
Thank you. And let me respond to that. So I'm really strident about not having employer stock in your retirement plan, because a lot of people have an issue with investing where if employer stock is offered in a 401k, people go way too much all in with the employer stock. I have to be really, really stark and strident with that to get people's attention, because people feel like, oh, I work here. I know everything's great. It's going to be wonderful to have my retirement and my employer stock. But that's too many eggs in one basket, because you're also getting a paycheck from that employer. And you never know when a company finds it's lost its way. Look at one of the bluest of blue chips, General Electric, that is in so much financial trouble now. And if people working for GE very heavily put GE stock in their retirement plan, they have way too much risk involved. I'll say this. If you really feel a strong sense of loyalty to where you work and company stock is one of the options, you can put in up to 10% of your 401k in company stock just so you feel like you're showing that loyalty, but no more than that. But my preference still remains zero.
Your advice was less than stellar and certainly not complete about building a home, and I needed to head upwind as a result. I had a great experience building a home, although I hired a general contractor. My brother is an architect and designed the home and provided excellent blueprints from just a few photos I provided. I asked him to act as general contractor, and he immediately declined. He said it would be impossible for him to get the best subcontractor since he lived in another state. And one bad subcontractor can be a huge headache for a homeowner. He suggested I identify a locally owned and independent lumber yard and construction supply store, not one of the chain stores, that had been around for a long time. He said call them and ask for the general manager, or even better, the owner, for a reference for a good GC. He said they will know who pays their bills on time, who does good work, who buys the cheap supplies or the good stuff, who has a good crew, who has a good reputation, etc. I got a reference there, and my general contractor did a great job.
That is a fantastic post, and thank you for sharing It's funny, when I talk to people who have actually built their own home, usually when I ask people if they would do it again, the answer is flat out no. In your case, it worked out very well, and I love the methodical process that your brother, the architect, recommended.
We recently had an article on Clark.com called Why You Should Beware of Sharing a Bank Account with an Elderly Parent, and this post is about that. I share a checking account with my elderly father. Why? I collect SSDI benefits, and my father is my representative payee.
So you have an unusual circumstance that makes that make sense. Normally, though, there are risks, as we described in the story, about sharing an account with an elderly relative, and the risk can go either way on that.
Clark, saving money by doing it yourself is an admirable goal. In speaking to callers about drafting wills, I've heard you discuss using software or an online service to draft a will. However, legal documents, especially wills, are not an area in which saving money is paramount. Getting it right is what counts. First, a computer program is no substitute for the advice of a competent attorney. A competent attorney will ask questions of the client, draft a will that will meet the needs of the client, and explain the will in simple terms so that the client can understand the document. While computers can draft a will that includes the results of a questionnaire, computers are not yet capable of providing advice tailored to the needs of a client or explaining their work. Second, unlike a computer or online service, the attorney will watch the client, notary, and witnesses execute the will to make sure the will is properly done. If a will is not properly executed as required by state law, the document will be invalid. This problem is surprisingly common, as many people are not very good at reading, understanding, or following instructions. Also, the average person is not going to recognize their mistakes due to lack of knowledge and experience of an attorney. As a result, the problem with the execution of computer-generated document wills probably will not be discovered until the executor attempts to file the will with the courthouse after the testator has died. The clerk at the courthouse will probably catch the error and will reject an invalidly executed will. At this point, it's impossible to fix it. Clark, your advice on using software online services to generate will is a bit stinky.
Thank you very much for that post. And that is consistent with posts that we've had from lawyers over the years. Whenever I've talked about using WillMaker or using LegalZoom to prepare a will. So you got to see it from my perspective. I can't get most people to even consider going to see a lawyer to do a will. When I talk about who should always see a lawyer to do a will, it's people who have decent amount of money, complicated family situation, blended family, anything, your own business. There are a lot of reasons you never want to do your own will. For others, at the very least, by doing your own will, particularly if you have minor children, you can account for who you want to raise them. I can't dispute anything you said, but what I face is trying to get people to even think about and do a will in the first place. I appreciate all your posts. Please go to Clark.com, go to Clark Stinks, and let me know where I'm missing the mark and I can serve you better. Jennifer joins us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, Clark. Thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely. Jennifer, you work for the big phone company.
I do. And I'm 31, almost 31.
Okay, and this is so funny. You work for a phone company and you keep distorting on me on the phone call.
Oh, I'm sorry. Can you hear me okay?
I hear you perfectly now.
Okay. Oh, what a bummer. I hope you can hear me through the whole call.
All right, go right ahead.
So I've worked for almost 31 years, and I'm 51 years old, and I want to retire and leave the company. So I will have two options I can choose from. One is a lump sum of $505,000.
Say what? How much?
Yes, $505,000. That would be my lump sum they would give me to use for the rest of my life.
That's fantastic. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, it doesn't seem like enough since I'm only 51, but I could also, the other option is a monthly annuity that I would get until I die, and before taxes, it's $2,270 a month.
Wow.
So, right. So if I live to even be 85, that $2,270 a month is a whole lot more money than $505,000.
Exactly. And that's why I have a preference most of the time that people take the monthly payment instead of taking the lump sum, because it's so hard for us as individuals to figure out how to invest that money and get a decent return on it. This
yes.
way, the whole purpose of it is for you not to outlive your money. So if they're going to yes. send you a check every month for as long as you live, that seems like a really great thing for me. Now, a lot of financial people will say, wait, I can handle this for you. I can be your hero. And Jennifer, I'm going to invest that money and you're going to have just millions that I'm going to come up for you, you know, for you.
Yes.
But the truth is that this is the easy button to just get the check every month for as long as you live.
Well, the reason people don't like it is because if I die, then my family doesn't have it.
Right.
The company keeps it or just stops giving it to me and them. But I have life insurance on myself to check that block.
Right.
So that they wouldn't have nothing.
Right. People refuse to take monthly payments, usually, for the exact reason you just said. What happens if I get hit by a bus the day after I decide? And
yeah.
it's like, well, you're not going to know you got hit by the bus.
Right.
Yeah, you plan for the fact that you are in your 50s. How healthy would you say you are?
Pretty healthy.
And
I don't have any medical conditions.
And how long do women tend to live in your family line?
My mother's still alive. She's in her 80s. My dad is still alive. He's in his 80s. My grandmother lived to be 104.
Okay, you answered the question for me. You win the lottery. You take the monthly payout and know that that's going to be there for you and forget the lump sum. We do have a briefing on Clark.com done by a really wise financial guy named Wes. If you want to see his formula, you can look at that. But the scenario you painted, the longevity in your family, take the monthly check. It's my pleasure to welcome you to the Clark Howard Show, where it's about you learning ways to keep more of what you make. It is so amazing what it's like now with flying, with airlines trying to fee you for everything, especially for bags. And you can have a bag that is a fraction of an inch larger than what an airline allows, and they're going to tear your wallet apart, charge you all kinds of fees. So as I shared with you a few months ago, when my daughter was headed off to college, we flew on Southwest because bags are free. You can check two bags each person free. And so we were able to cart all her stuff off to college. And so I was meticulously using a tape measure to make sure we met total inches and for each dimension and all that. And gosh, it was really kind of a pain to make sure that the bags were okay. And with carry-ons, you have to deal with that. With Spirit, Frontier, and Allegiant, if you go just an nth of an inch over, suddenly they're going to charge you $100 potentially at the gate for your micro carry-on being too large. So now Kayak has a new feature that will actually figure out if your bag is A-OK for whoever it is you're flying. And it only works right now for certain iPhones. No Android version yet. But with it, you can just, with your iPhone, take the camera, the Kayak app, and it takes a digital image of the luggage, calculates the dimensions, and then we'll be able to tell you, yes or no, you're okay with that bag. Now, I know this drives people crazy, but whenever there's an issue when I fly Allegiant, Frontier, or Spirit, I always take a black trash bag with me. So if they reject my carry-on, I will abandon the carry-on suitcase and put my possessions in the black trash bag. And that was not original with me. I saw it happen at a Spirit gate where somebody was prepared and put their things into the trash bag, avoided the $100 gate check fee, and just carried on their stuff in the black trash bag. And so I'm always prepared. You know, Boy Scout motto, always be prepared, right? So I'm prepared. And isn't it funny that that's where we are? The strangest thing, though, is it's hard to tell who's a full-fare airline and who's a discount airline anymore and how they treat you with the baggage. Because United does that same junk with most of their coach passengers, that you aren't allowed to put something in the overhead bin anymore on what they call basic economy. And so all the baggage fees are huge revenue for all the airlines except Southwest. And so it's all about you buy the ticket, and that only buys you the privilege to be charged fees for anything else you want to do, seat assignments, whatever. But at least you don't want to get to the airport and find out your bag is too big. And all I got to say to Kayak, most people are on Androids. Come up with a version that works for Android. Charlene's with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Charlene.
Hi, Clark.
Charlene, you got a question for your son. What's going on with him?
He graduated college in May, and his first student loan payment is due in November. He has three subsidized student loans, which total nearly $11,000. He's never had any credit other than these loans, and his credit score is 652. He has the money to pay those in full now, but what's the best course of action to positively impact his credit score? Should he pay it off in full or over time? And if so, how long?
So you said he's at a 652.
Yes.
Which may be enough of a score for him to get a low limit traditional Visa or MasterCard or Discover card. So I'd like him to do that regardless of where we talk next about these three subsidized student loans.
Okay.
And I wished he or you would have called me before he graduated, because then it's really easy to get a credit card.
Okay.
But is he a member of any credit union?
He is.
All right. I'd like him to go to the credit union, and instead of applying straight online for a credit card, talk face-to-face with one of the loan officers and see what the likelihood is he'll be approved for a small limit Visa or MasterCard.
All right.
And if that doesn't get it done, if they're like, not quite there at the 650 where you are, the next thing would be to potentially try a low-limit card with Discover.
All right.
And if all traditional channels fail, I'd like him to try something called Petal Card, PETALcard.com. And it's a non-traditional issuer of traditional Visa cards, and see if he can get one from them.
All right.
On the student loans, with federally subsidized student loans, the interest rates, now that he's going to be paying, and when he would have graduated from school, those loans are at pretty low rates, aren't they?
Yes, about 4% or less.
So that's really lucky. You know, people taking out student loans now, federally subsidized or unsubsidized, are paying higher rates as interest rates have gone up. So his timing was good. And the 11 represents his entire student loan debt?
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
He was a very good student.
Well, that is great. So if he has cash, he could pay them off, but at the interest rates they have, there may be other priorities. Like, what kind of things is he having to do right now? Like, is he having to go rent an apartment? Is he needing transportation? Like, what's going on in his life, let's say, in the next 18 months to 2 years?
He's still at home, so he's enjoying being rent-free for right now. And transportation is taken care of, so he does not have those expenses right now.
Hmm. What point are you going to charge him rent?
Maybe soon.
Even a token amount of rent, I think, is good for somebody to be paying who's now graduated and has a job?
Yes.
Yeah. So I think that's good, and I hope you've set ground rules for him.
Yes.
Okay. All right. You can tell I'm a parent of kids who've been through this, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So if there's nothing specifically that he's trying to save up for or anything like that, and he's got the funds, 4% even, just go ahead and encourage him to wipe out the student loan debt.
Okay.
And be, he's starting off in a new job, finishing college, being totally debt-free will be wonderful.
Great.
But before he pays them off, I want him to make sure he can get one of these credit cards.
Okay. I will do that.
And then blow through the student loans and he'll be good. Mosley is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, how you doing?
Good afternoon, Clark.
How can I serve you today?
Three things, Clark. Number one, I heard about your health scare, so I'm glad to hear that you're back to health and serving.
Oh, well, thank you. Somehow, the fact that I had rhabdomyolysis has just reemerged. I don't know if it popped up. Did you see it on the web or something?
I did.
Because several people have mentioned it again just recently, and that was a year and a half ago. And it was a pretty scary thing for a while, but I'm fully healthy again. Thank you.
Good deal. Secondly, I've been listening to you for a while. I've been following some of your advice. And right now I have a 800-plus credit score with all three agencies. So thanks for putting out that good information.
You know that makes your score higher than mine. You just checked mine recently, and you're above me right now.
Well, I still need to get to that net revenue that where you're at, so you've got to be there.
Okay.
But my question is this. I have about $20,000 left on a car loan. I have some credit cards with pretty high limits on them. One of them would take care of most of that loan. So I was considering doing a balance transfer to get the interest down to zero while paying that off, and I wanted to get your advice on that.
So you can do a zero balance transfer, no 4% fee for doing the balance transfer?
There's like a 3% transfer fee, but no interest for a certain amount of time after that.
So you get like 18 months, 0% interest?
Right.
Would you be able to wipe out 20 grand in 18 months?
No, but my plan was to follow that process again. And, when that time, when that 0% time, that promo APR is up, to just do that transfer again.
All right. How long do you think it would take you to take out the $20,000?
If I pay it at its current rate, it would be 4 years. So I would say I would shoot for two.
Okay. Because I'm trying to gauge what's the best idea. What is the interest rate you have on the car loan?
5.9.
Which is not a terrible rate. Is that issued by a car dealer, a bank, or a credit union?
Bank.
Okay. Are you a member of a credit union?
I am.
With your credit score, a credit union may take that loan out at 2.something%.
Okay.
And that would be better than you doing the 0% transfer, paying the 3% fee up front, and knowing that a clock's going to tick, and whenever the 0% runs out, you got to try to figure out how to do something else again. I'd rather it be simple. And if you were to take the $20,000 on the car loan and go into, let's say, a 2 or 3 year car loan refi with a credit union, you may get a rate low enough that that'll just work for you.
I hadn't considered that.
Yeah, credit unions do a big business in refiing car loans because roughly somewhere 75% to 80% of people finance a vehicle at the dealer, and the dealers mark them up and stuff. So credit unions pretty easily can refi somebody into a significantly lower rate usually than what they've got in the loan they originally took out buying the vehicle.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'll definitely look into that. I'll be in touch with my credit union today.
And see, since you've got this, what's known as a golden credit score, once you're above 800, It's known as a golden score. You probably will have people at the credit union saying, hey, how about we borrow some money from you, Mosley?
They can always ask.
Because you got it so together. That is phenomenal. That's fantastic to have such a great credit score. So good for you. That comes with how you handle money over time, and you've obviously handled money beautifully.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Hey, listeners, whether you love true crime or comedies, celebrity interviews, news, or even motivational speakers, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue, right? And guess what? Now you can call the shots on your auto insurance, too. Enter the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. The Name Your Price tool puts you in charge of your auto insurance by working just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance. Then they'll show you a variety of coverages that fit within your budget, giving you options. Now, that's something you'll want to press play on. It's easy to start a quote, and you'll be able to choose the best option for you fast. It's just one of the many ways you can save with Progressive Insurance. Quote today at progressive.com to try the Name Your Price tool for yourself and join over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Susan is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Clark. Thank you so much for taking my call.
It is my pleasure.
I love listening to you. I have a question on flood insurance. I'm getting ready to purchase a home that is absolutely going to require that I get flood insurance. And I thought that the only option available was government flood insurance. But the insurance carrier that I'm getting insurance from gave me the option of private flood insurance. And I didn't know how that compared to governmental insurance and if it's something I should even consider.
So private flood insurance is only a backstop if you're buying a very expensive dwelling that okay. you need a backstop beyond the federal flood insurance program. The federal flood insurance program is subsidized by your fellow taxpayers.
Okay.
And so the first dollar loss you want to go against the federal flood insurance program. And it's really simple to buy it. There's a website that explains everything about the federal program at floodsmart.gov. And okay. for homes that the structure itself, you know, net of land, you don't consider the land, that have a value of $250,000 or less,
okay,
you're fully covered by the federal flood insurance policy. How much is this home you're buying likely worth?
It will be covered for like $300,000.
Okay, so you could, I mean, you have a situation you could stack additional private flood insurance on top. In the situation where this house is that you're buying, would a flood create a total loss of the house? Is it multi-story? Like, what's this looking like?
It is a one-story house, but it is a second home at the beach.
Okay. I'm the same situation as you, Susan.
Okay.
I have a second home at the beach, and I have a homeowner's policy. I have a windstorm policy. And those are both private.
Okay.
I have the federal flood insurance for the $250,000, and then I have private flood insurance for the excess.
Okay.
So it's much more complicated. And with the second home, I should tell you, you and I don't get the same subsidy that people do with a primary residence. And I think that's just as it should be. I mean, why should our fellow taxpayers be subsidizing us to the hilt when it's and it's a second home? But it is generally cheaper to have the first $250,000 under the federal program. And in your case, you'd have potentially a little supplement of a private policy.
Okay. And may I ask a follow-up question? Is there any differentiation from having a separate wind policy from the homeowners versus a combined policy, or is it just?
Well, generally what they do is it would be from the same insurer. but insurers charge you a premium separate for the windstorm, what they usually call windstorm.
Okay. All right. That's great.
And one thing you should know, get ready for the joys of having a place on the water, which is great, but know that there will often be a larger deductible on that policy when it's a named storm.
Okay. Yes. Yep. Okay. All right. Thank you very much for the information. I really appreciate
it. Sure. And let's hope no floods, no hurricanes, nothing come near this home of yours for many, many, many years to come.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Sure. You're listening to The Clark Howard Show. Thanks for joining us today. The Clark Howard Show is produced by Kim Drobes, Joel Larsgaard, Deborah Reese, and Jim Ayers. And remember, 24 hours a day, we're there to serve you at Clark.com and ClarkDeals.com.